are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This podcast is brought to you by our patrons at patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play. Welcome to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the amazing universe of the Elder Scrolls. Adventurers, welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. This is your host, Tom, or Robots. I'm here with Lotus of Doom, and Lotus, we have a very special guest today.
It's true. It's not just me.
It's not just you. It's not just you're the co-host. You're not a guest. We've been doing this podcast together for years, and I just realized that Lotus has been my guest every single episode.
Spoiler alert, I'm actually not a co-host. I'm just the longest running guest on any podcast ever.
That's amazing. Wow. Well, let's introduce him. Michael Zenke, lore master from Zenimax Studios. I can't talk. My mouth is not working well. Welcome to the show. We're very excited to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Good to be here.
Yeah, we got to chat a little bit in Vegas. I think that's the first time you and I have officially met each other, although I've been a fan of the things you've been working on for a long time. And recently we're able to set this up in order to have you on the show. And we've got Necrom coming in just a few weeks.
Yes.
So I mean, that's gotta be exciting for you. I know every time your team rolls out a new set of content for the year, all that stuff. First of all, what's that like? I mean, let's just get into that a little bit.
It never gets old. It is very much one of the reasons I'm still doing this. I've been doing this for over a decade, and that closing element where we all dig deep and get the thing out the door is absolutely, it's a lot. It's a heck of a lot, but it's a really good experience. I know Tom Murphy, the lead, the design lead on this release, is still battening down the hatches, thanks to feedback and all other stuff. And it's great to see this thing that's been in all of our heads now for the better part of a year become a real boy, which is delightful.
A real boy. Yeah. And we got a glimpse of it at ESO Vegas. We got to see a little bit more. You revealed some of it back in like January. We got a little bit more of a glimpse of what was coming. Some awesome panels going over voice actors and some of the art direction and all of these other things. And so all of that was so awesome to be a part of. But Lotus and I have some other questions. We wanted to talk to you a little bit more about Hermaeus Mora. About Morrowind, the Necrom area and the peninsula, all of that. So here, let's get into it. So my first question, seemingly everybody knows, because everybody and their mom, including mine, has played Skyrim. I did a series on YouTube and live streams where my mom would make the decisions, but I played the character.
That's great.
And it was amazing because they were
very entertaining.
There were moments that like viciousness came out of her, and I was like, I do not know who this woman is. This is amazing. But anyway, Hermaeus Mora was a key character from the Dragonborn DLC for Skyrim. Right. What was it like for you personally getting to work to bring this character into ESO? Obviously, he's already been a part of ESO, but even more is like a bigger focus.
Absolutely. So I mentioned Tom Murphy before. It's worth noting that my role in the team is very specific. I'm like sort of the in-house bard. I'm the support guy that a lot of people can tap into as a resource when they want to talk about new stuff or, hey, we want to do this slightly differently. Tom Murphy, the zone lead, my boss, Bill Slavasek, Rich Lambert, Jeremy Serra, they're the folks that kind of run the ship. And then the rest of the team, the writers and designers, animators, artists, world builders, they're the ones that really bring this whole thing kicking, screaming into the world, making it a real boy, right?
Yeah.
That incredible crew has it's been awesome to watch as they take old Squidface and turn him from this, you know, very specific characterization, right, that we see in Skyrim, that we see in even the launch game of ESO,
right,
and translate him into this very new context. My part of that has been incredibly rewarding. Primarily, I'd say the biggest contributions I've made sort of directly to this release are through, I was the writer for Azander Al-Sabiades, one of the companions. And then I worked very closely with Brian Wheeler on the Arcanist class. So those components and where it touched Hermaeus Mor's many tentacles, uh-huh, are sort of where I had a lot of like direct contribution. But like I said, as support guy, it's lots and lots of conversations about tentacles, lots of conversations about, like, you know, what the inevitable knower would like think about X, Y, or Z. I think in some of the PTS stuff that people have seen, and in some of the stuff from the Vegas event, you've seen some of the incredible, like, not just like world building, but some of the architecture, some of the buildings, some of
it's very unique.
Oh my gosh, man.
It's cool that you expanded so much on it from what we had seen prior to, where we've seen Apocrypha, like actually just going back to the Dragonbone expansion type of thing. Right. But there's so much more to it than those sort of, for lack of a better word, linear corridors that you were led down by exploring the Black Books. This is much more of the realm itself, like you guys have done with the other Daedric realms that we've seen. So,
right. Absolutely. Right. In Skyrim, great goal, right, by the Bethesda team, because they wanted to give that sort of very loose, like, ephemeral experience where each time you dropped in through a Black Book to Apocrypha, you were like kind of a little island out in that great abyssal sea, those inky waters stretching off to the horizon. With ESO, obviously, we have sort of different design goals. So we need you to be down on the ground and able to walk from point A to point B. I've spent a lot of time now talking about like what a apocryphal ink pot or bookcase or whatever will look like. And there are folks on Elder Scrolls Online have been knocking it out of the park for, you know, the better part of a decade now. And this time, I think they have outdone themselves. It's incredible.
Yeah. So. Well, let's talk a little bit more about Apocrypha, because these Daedric realms are much more expansive than any one glimpse we've gotten in any of the games. According to the lore, there's always a lot more going on there than we know, right? And your team, like you mentioned, the team at Zos is well known for taking the lore and these locations and characters and expanding on them in really fun and creative, and then also sometimes surprising ways. Sometimes we get a glimpse of something and surprising in a good way. Like we only have, it's like looking at something through a keyhole, right? Like we have this one little glimpse of Apocrypha from one DLC in one game in a series that has spanned going on three decades now.
Right.
And like you get a chance to show us more about what's going on in this world. So when it comes to a place like Apocrypha, what kinds of inspiration did you draw from in order to expand on this?
So I know very strongly that the team drew from, obviously, you know, you can't talk about Mora without talking about Lovecraft, challenging figure in his own way, but
sure. You can't transplant him from his own time into our time without some major social issues with some of his writings.
Right.
But putting that stuff aside, Cthulhu and ancient gods and all of that is still very inspirational for modern current day fiction.
Absolutely. And you can, you know, you just need to look up in the sky to see the tentacles sort of, you know, wriggling their way out of the sky portals. Or I love the glyphics. For some reason, those things just really have stuck with me. They feature pretty heavily in the dungeons and the prologue before coming up to Necrealm. And those cool little boxes of secrets just really, I think they're just such a great addition to the lore. The inspiration, obviously, you know, very strongly Lovecraftian on many different axes. Like you mentioned before, we've seen Apocrypha before in a specific context, but Chroma Incognito is a whole new ball game. Color out of space, full weirdness. When you walk through chroma, and you see those like weird wriggling like ink plants come like you know, slurping out of the ground. that you know, like you were saying, right? Like each of the Oblivion realms has its very own, its own vibe and its own thing about it. And I think because there was so much great material, both from Skyrim and from the work that Tom Murphy and Bill Slavicsek did to create this space for us to explore, like, holy cats, like the way it's been realized in the game, I can't wait for everybody to get a chance to get in there. The thing that I think I'm most excited about in terms of like Apocrypha specifically is we've never really seen how mortals specifically interact with the realm, right? Like Arcanists come directly from that notion. They're not beholden to Hermaeus Mora. They draw their power from the Daedric realm. And so every Arcanist kind of has their own story that you as a player, right, you get to decide what that is. Like, what's my connection to this Daedric realm? The Ciphers of the Eye are a very interesting faction that work and exist in the realm of Apocrypha. And what's their deal? Why does Mora allow them to be there? And then, of course, there's like the downside of that, which is like if you spend too much time in Apocrypha, you end up as one of the Hushed, which is one of the new sort of creatures like scuttling around in Apocrypha. You know, they don't have faces so much anymore. It's challenging. There's some challenging stuff. Watch out for a book that will take your face. That's my like takeaway for you.
Oh God. Okay.
As a person.
All right. Good note. Yeah.
No, I think you're onto something here, because one of the appeals of role-playing games is the ability to role-play your character in that world. Right. So to create an Arcanist and have your own backstory and your own connection to this realm and Hermaeus Mora, and that's part of the fun. It's part of the fun of making these other characters and being in this place that is over the last decade has become more and more fleshed out with all of these different zones and all these interactions and all of that. So that part is really cool. But let's talk about a good old Hermie. By his nature, he's very mysterious.
Right.
He's very knowing of, and also knowing of all sorts of kinds of knowledge. Very expansive, right? And without ruining too much, what can you share about our understanding of him and how that will change and grow? Because every time you take on one of these realms or one of the Daedric princes with a new story, we get a more fleshed out view of them. It becomes a little bit more three-dimensional.
Well, yeah, I mean, in terms of like the whole book thing that's going on with this whole thing, it's like we get another chapter to whatever it is each time we kind of address this, which is one of the things that I'm so excited about with this. Is this is all my like favorite stuff.
This is the year of Lotus.
This is the running joke. I had a couple criticisms last year of like some of the combat things, and it felt like you guys took it personally and decided to give me literally everything I ever wanted the following announcement.
Like, here you go, Lotus. Like,
well,
shut up.
Thoughtful of you to give me everything I've ever wanted. So,
well, I'm glad you're into it. Hermaeus Mora. So, yeah, I mean, every time we get a chance to like bring a Daedric prince forward, right, it's about like what's our goal. I mentioned this a little bit at the Vegas event, but Hermie actually showed up kind of like as an outgrowth, as a natural extension of the narrative that Bill and Tom and the other leadership folks were like honing in on, you know, a secret so powerful it could unravel the universe.
Yeah, that sounds like a Hermie thing.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. And so with that as a thing that came, you know, front and center, him sort of worming his way onto the stage, like getting his tentacles in the mix, that was like something that came as part of the as the story developed, right? So the Hermaeus Mora that we get to see in this release is substantively different in a lot of ways from the Mora that you've seen either in Skyrim, where he needs, you know, a mortal's help, obviously, but as you can tell, there's a lot of baggage there, right, with how that narrative plays out. And
right.
And
it's also two ages of the world after the events that we're seeing in ESO.
Right.
So there probably has been some character development and experience that has happened
Absolutely. I mean, Mora in particular, right? Like, I would, you know, and I think we both in like lore previously and in the game now, we definitely have some conversations about like, does Mora engage with time, right? In the same way that a right. lot of other people do, right?
That's a great question. That's, yeah.
One of his portfolios is fate, right? And so the threads of fate and how they play into both this story and then sort of where Mora's, I'm going to use the word head here, but you know, it's like a metaphysical head, where Mora's head is in this narrative, right? That's a very specific place here for this release. So the Mora that you get to interact with is trying to find a way to engage with you as a mortal to a specific end, because of course that's what every Daedric Prince wants. We don't get to talk to Daedric Princes unless they want something, right? Like that's kind of right. how that goes.
Right. And what they want isn't always clear or lines up with what we want or any of that. But
I would say almost never.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Even when you think it does, there's a lot of misdirection.
Right. But one of the things that's really great about this context is so often the princes end up being, you know, not the mustache twirling bag. I don't think we have really any like truly mustache twirling bad guys in ESO, but like they're pretty clearly on the bad guy side, right? Like when Molag Bol shows up, you know what he wants, right?
Yeah, that I was going to say. So, some of them are a lot easier to defend than others.
Right, exactly. So Mora here in this context is much more of like, as neutral as a Daedric Prince kind of gets, right? Like in the original release of the game, we feature some fun, I would say more neutral interactions with Daedric Princes as well. And it's more along that axis where you can kind of look at Mora's motivations and you can look at his actions and try to, you can kind of apply some mortal logic and like a morality to his choices in a way that I don't think, especially in Skyrim, right? Like in Skyrim, the stuff that Mora does is like is purposefully, I think so, inscrutable, right? And here, I think you get to get inside his head a little bit more. Now, is that because he wants you to be inside his head, or like what's the deal there? Anyway, so I'm just throwing out ideas.
Right. Yeah,
it's fun stuff.
Yeah, what's the transaction going on? What's in it for him?
There's
what's
always all some of type that? Of payment.
Yeah, one of the things Lotus and I have talked about with Hermaeus Mora is that of all the Daedric Princes, he's kind of like a force of nature. He's very close to just like sometimes the volcano erupts and it blows up your village, but it probably didn't have anything out for your village. It probably just did that because it's a volcano.
Yeah.
Hermaeus Mora is kind of, I mean, most, you could describe all the Daedric Princes kind of in this way. This is just foundationally who they are. And so they do their things that they do. But when it comes to forbidden knowledge and fate and all of it, that just feels like it's part of the fabric of reality in a way.
Yeah. There's a lot of passive neutrality with Hermaeus Mora.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, it's one of the things you're calling it a great thing. It's one of my favorite things about the setting, actually, right? Aedra and Daedra, right? Like Aedra are a very specific thing. They are the creators, right? They are a very, it's a very specific term. Daedra just means not that.
Not our ancestors, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Not, I characterize it as like not from around here, right? Because, I mean, it's true, right? Like Daedric Prince is a catch-all term used to describe a bunch of like extraordinarily powerful beings, most of which don't really have anything to do with each other. You know, obviously there's like a core group that are like siblings of after fashion, but Mora is a great example. Like, where the hell did that guy come from? I don't know.
Right.
Like
right,
the lore is like very vague about where Mora's tentacular like presence occurred. And like, and it disagrees with itself in a number of different places about like what Mora even is.
Yeah.
Which I love that stuff. Right. I love the idea that just like, you know, in like in true Lovecraftian fashion, Mora might be from somewhere else. Right.
Right. Yeah.
He's here in our sort of sphere of influence in our world. But maybe not originally. So it's fun stuff. I love
it. I agree with that. It's very cool just because it's even more gray than some of the other gray definitive things. It's like, well, there's not a lot of black and white when it comes to Elder Scrolls stuff. And more is like even more gray than most things just because it's like there's so little concrete, I guess, both physically and metaphorically about the character that I've always just thought is very neat, where it's just like really hard to nail much down with the character.
This also connects to real world religion. I have two bachelor's degrees, religious studies and philosophy. I just studied all deep thoughts on everything. But this is one of the things you see in religions across the world is right. that there it's the unreliable narrator thing, because every religious book, every document is written by multiple people from multiple perspectives at different times in history about similar topics and the concepts and the ways those topics evolved over time. And people's understanding about the truth or whatever it was has changed over time. And the same thing happens in Elder Scrolls games, where right. you have different perspectives from different people and different cultures and the ways they interacted. And it's all just seeing pieces of a whole. And sometimes those things seem to contradict. And that's how our own reality works, which is what makes that so freaking cool. But here, we need to move on to some other stuff. We've got to talk about Necrom. Did you want to ask a question about Necrom lettuce?
Yeah, so I actually want to, we've got four that's in that two-part thing, but I really want to just get this one addressed just because this kind of falls more into my weird sphere of playing all of the Elder Scrolls games.
Yeah, we only have so much time, so we're going to pick the hits through it.
Necrom is a place that really was barely even fleshed out in Arena, the Elder Scrolls 1, and has mostly just kind of been like a reference here or there within the lore. Was there anything specifically interesting you found about addressing this area again? Because it's kind of like untapped lore. It happened. You guys have kind of addressed it, weird little tidbits like this throughout the series, and I recently have enjoyed a lot of your weird deep cuts to like games like Battlespire and stuff that I know a lot of people are just like, yep, it's just a name. It's like, no, that is a Battlespire reference, and all four of us that played it totally get it. But like, this is another one that it's like, it's been a long time since we've actually seen the very pixelated version of Necrom that we could see before.
Absolutely. I'll try to be focused in my answer because there's like a lot to this, obviously. So the big thing here, right, that I think Tom and the designers and the writers were really like inspired by is how can we look at the Dark Elves? So how can we look at this culture that has now been tread and retread several different times across the original Morrowind release, our own Elder Scrolls Online Morrowind release, in the original launch game, Stonefall, Dashaan. Like there's a lot of water under the bridge for the Dark Elves as a culture, right? How can we find a new axis to like look at this fascinating group of people and try to like get back in to talking about Dark Elves in a way that we can all kind of be back at square one and find something new and excited to talk about? That's, I think, where this came from. Obviously, the Telvanni themselves, as I would call them stewards of the peninsula, they're a fascinating cultural group all to themselves, right? They have a ton of internality to them, a bunch of different ways of like looking at the world and engaging with the world, just for the fact alone that they're not part of the Three Banners War sets them apart entirely from almost every other Dark Elf, I think, that we've kind of featured in the game previously. And then you go a level below that to the city of Necrom itself, the Keepers of the Dead, Dark Elf ancestor worship. And you get into like you were saying, sort of this deep, gooey, nougaty center of wonderful storytelling opportunity. That was, I think, really about, like I said, finding a new axis, being able to go back in some very real ways to the roots of what makes Dark Elves Dark Elves, right? That we've done stories in Elder Scrolls Online before about their Dark Elves interactions with their ancestors.
Yeah, but the Khymer. You go back in time and interact with the Khymer, and like, yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah. I was the writer for Stonefalls. So all of that crazy Brothers of Strife stuff and the there's a objective there called Othrenis, which is literally just like, hey, grandpappy, could you like not harsh my relationship even though you've been dead for like 200 years? Can you get off my back, please?
Chill out, ghost. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the kind of thing that like, you know, as a storyteller, as a game designer, right, like just gets us super psyched up, right? And that's Necrom writ large, right? That Necrom is that element of their culture just stacked on top of itself. The very bones of the city itself, where did they come from? What's that? So to say this concisely, I think Necron represents a host of new opportunities to talk about Dark Elf culture, a chance for everybody to kind of be, you know, none of us can go back to that place we were before we played Morrowind for the first time, right? But something like that, right? Where we walk into Necrom and everything's weird and cool and you don't know what's going on again, kind of all over again. And that's what Necrom represents, I think, in this release for us.
Yeah. So, okay. So as we're delving into this location, can you give us any specifics about how it feels different or how the society feels different?
Like, right. Because we have had, other than the game Morrowind and obviously having points where we've jumped back to the region throughout the series as a whole.
Right.
We had, you know, the base game portions of Morrowind that were on the mainland. And then we had Morrowind, the chapter. So it was like the Vardenfell that we all knew from, well, old, those of us old enough to have played The Elder Scrolls 3. Right.
20 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. What?
Yeah, so it's like, it's kind of interesting because you're back again. So yeah, kind of to Robot's point, it's like this is revisiting it again, but not quite the same.
Right, not at all. And so I don't want to get too specific to avoid, you know, like I'd love, you know, I can't wait for people to play this and sure. See what it's like. But sure, to talk about some like high level cultural stuff.
Sure.
The interaction between Tribunal clergy in particular and the keepers of the dead is something that we play with sort of front and center. That's a pretty, I think, pretty soon after walking into the city, that's sort of a narrative element you run into. And pretty much every other Dark Elf, right, that you've met in Elder Scrolls Online before, you could probably throw a rock and say like, they're probably, you know, follow the Tribunal, right? they probably care about Almalexia. They probably care about Sothisil. That's not the most important thing in Necrom, right? This ain't, you mentioned the Chimer, right? This ancient ancestor worship that goes way back. Necrom is a city that was established before the Battle of Red Mountain, right? Like it is a settlement older than Dark Elves being Dark Elves. And so the narrative substrate, the like that you mentioned before, that you study philosophy and religion, like the underpinnings of the philosophy and religiosity of these people in this particular settlement are completely orthogonal to all the other like Dark Elves we've seen in the game before. And so that, how that plays out, how those changed priorities not only change like the kinds of things they say and the things they care about, but how that impacts the quests that we end up having you do in that area. That's the thing I'm like super psyched for people to see and engage with. Yeah, there's a, and you know, as always, there's a bunch of really crazy cool lore books in there too, that I think people are really gonna get excited about.
Awesome.
So
awesome.
No, it's, a lot of material to jump into.
That's great. I mean, we love that. The fact that there's always new stuff every year with ESO is a huge boon to our show. But no, I think you're really onto something there. This idea that the culture itself is older than the more current culture across other parts of Morrowind and these communities. And you see that in real world culture, the tie back to a history that's bigger and deeper, and how that affects people's lives and their identity, their self-identity. And that's really cool because you're describing something that's very deep and interesting. And if I know anybody who's a fan of Morrowind and Dunmer and all of that, that's part of it, is that their cultural identity, how the houses of Morrowind interact with each other, all of the complexity of that, their worship, all of that is just like chewy, yummy nougat in the center of all of this stuff.
It's also interesting because even if you just take region by region, which is ironically what we've been doing over the past several episodes of the podcast, is jumping from region to region to just do an overview of each of the different areas around the continent. Just taking place within Morrowind itself, you describing just how different Necrom is and the Telvanni Peninsula from, you know, mainland, you know, whether you're in Dishan, going to, you know, Morhold or like the actual island of Vardenfell, like these are all the same area, but they have their own unique twist to each of them.
Yeah, like Florida and New York and Texas and California are all in the United States, but they're all very much their own cultures in different places.
Really different.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. So that totally makes sense. Well, we have to take a break. We got to go thank our patrons. So we'll be right back. We're definitely going to be digging into some more stuff. So don't go anywhere.
It's that time. Holiday shopping is here, and I've got something to help you out. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't see anywhere else. And that's legit. How many different stores can you find exactly the same products and you just are shopping for whoever has the best deal? No, this is a place that has high-quality, unique, often handmade or made in the US products by independent artists and small businesses that truly create one-of-a-kind gifts for all sorts of different seasons, and it's the holiday season. Well, get this. I found one that I thought was super cool. Now, my wife loves puzzles. She loves mysteries. She loves escape rooms. They have murder mystery jigsaw puzzles where you use the puzzle to solve the mystery. There's a few of these, and I think I might pick up the clairvoyant convention one. I think she'll love it. And that's just one example. They've got gifts for moms and teens, book lovers, history buffs, diehard football fans, foodies, mixologists, gardeners. There's something here for everybody on your gift list. And they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice with every purchase. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/scrollslore. That's uncommongoods.com/scrollslore for 15% off. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
This is Hamish Morak, Dragonborn, and you are educating yourself to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast.
We are forever thankful for Wes Johnson joining us on the show and the giving us these little sound bites.
The reason I listen to our own show, even when editing.
So. Yeah. And also, just real quick here in the middle of the show, Voice of Palooza is going on. We have a link that pops up if you want to donate to help fight Alzheimer's. That would be amazing. I am doing a panel. I'm helping host a panel with Wes Johnson and a bunch of other voice actors who have worked on Elder Scrolls games and Fallout games tomorrow at 5 p.m. Eastern. So I know if you're listening to the audio of this, it'll be too late. But if you're here on the live show, come join us. It's on my channel, twitch.tv/robotsradio. It's all in order to raise money for an amazing cause. So come join us for that. And even if you catch this later on and you want to donate, I'll put a link in the show notes and all of that. Also,
my coworkers, Rich Lambert and Bill Slavicek and the incredible Becky Ignoski are going to be on their own panel with Wes, I believe, coming up as well. I don't know the date off the top of my head, but you get to hear those folks talk about the process of making all this stuff, bringing it to life. A lot of good story nougats in that as well.
I love how this is expanded into like a full like crossover where, even though I like both games, like there was, it was more of a Fallout focused thing. And now it's like Fallout and Elder Scrolls, kind of just the way everything blends together. It's really cool for a great cause.
Yeah. Look up Voice of Palooza. There are links. There will be videos up on YouTube of the different stuff. You can always go check that out. Stuff out later. So lots of awesome stuff, but we got to thank our patrons. We'll do this real quick. Welcome to our newest patrons, Josh G, Joseph R, and Sergi P. Thank you for joining us and supporting the show. We couldn't do this without you. So thank you very, very much. And shout outs to our Daedric Prince tier patrons, Jacob K, Kira C, and Noodle Al Dente. I haven't asked them. I've mentioned this, but I haven't found out specifically which Daedric Princes they are. But we've got three of them right here supporting the show. So thank you to all of you and all 122 of our patrons. You guys are amazing.
Everyone. Congrats, guys.
Yeah, yeah. We've got some more reviews, but tell you what, I'm going to save those for next week so we can have as much time as possible to talk to the lore master here. So don't go anywhere. Let's continue the conversation.
You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, dear child of Sithis. That is why the Night Mother loves you.
He did three of them, and I have to just put them all over the show. You know,
sweet. Sweet mother.
sweet mother. She's quite the sweet mother. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the Arcanist This Arcanist class, obviously.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the big thing. Everybody's so excited. Hey, they squeezed in a new class. Finally, we're getting a new class. This is awesome. Woo! Everybody gets excited, right? And it looks awesome. Like, Lotus and I got to play it early at the event, yep. And Lotus actually went to the other event.
Yeah, the one in San Francisco, where they let me play it for an irresponsible amount of time.
So. Right, and now it's up on the PTS, so more people are trying it out. This is a class that's clearly tied to the pursuit of hidden knowledge and Hermaeus Mur in his realm, like you mentioned before, and we can roleplay our character origins and create our own headcanon for them. But to you, is there a backstory to this class? You kind of hinted at this before. Is there like an unofficial or just an like official or unofficial version of this? Like, how does this work?
Sure. So I'll give you the unofficial one, because the official one is just like I said, right? You as a person in Tamriel, you find or acquire or are given or are threatened with a book of unknowable, impossible knowledge. And via this book and its connection to the realm of Apocrypha, you tap into this like incredible occultic power. And that's the only thing that's true about the Arcanist, like canonically, right?
Okay. So everything that's
else
it.
Is up to you. Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Everything else, pretty cool.
Everything else is up to you. Like, how do you get the book? Was it something you wanted? Is it something that you didn't want? Right?
Yeah, like, you stumble on it like the Dragonborn just opens up a book and is like, oh God, now I'm in Apocrypha.
Exactly.
Right.
Once you have the power, what do you do with it? Like, are you a big fan of Hermaeus Mur? Do you go to Apocrypha looking to sign up, right? Do you secretly want to like tear him down or steal the secrets of Apocrypha for your own, right? Like, there's a lot of different, like, and this is me having spent like, what, 5 seconds here describing this, and we're already talking like 30 or 40 different characters, right? Like, it's one of the things I think is most exciting about Elder Scrolls characters, player characters, rather than any other RPG, is like, there's no, you know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you what a Templar is, right? Like, a Templar channels this beautiful golden light, these powers. We very loosely suggest there may, if you so choose, be some connection to Stendar if you want. But like, you and I, you know, all of us sitting here and probably a lot of people listening know that the Aedra are extremely fickle. They don't talk to us. They don't engage with us anyone else. So like, all the time when I'm talking to my coworkers and we talk about lore, you were talking about the unreliable narrator earlier. The way that I frame that is like, you know, in the grand tradition of the dude, that's just like your opinion, man.
That's great. That's great.
So like, if you want to tell me that you're a Templar that like channels Stendar's wrath to like destroy the undead, I'll be like, that's great, man. I believe you. That's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's to say it's true, right?
Right. Or maybe you were fooled by Azura and you think Azura is Stendar.
And anything in between, whoops. Right? Like, there's a lot of beautiful, like, sort of discontinuity there, which is, I think, very wonderful and lovely. Unofficial canon, the thing that I have in my head is, have either of you ever read a series of novels called the Young Wizards series? There's an author by the name of Diane Duane. It's sort of Harry Potter before Harry Potter. It's a story of a young girl who finds a book in a public library. This is how old this book is. She finds a book in a public library, and she learns how to cast magic from it. It's a book called So You Want to Be a Wizard. Diane Duane was originally a computer programmer before she became a full-time author. Very talented woman, wrote a bunch of the old Star Trek novelizations, especially the original series. And so her version of magic is like, basically it's like a computer programming language for the universe where you can in and change the values of a star to save it from like exploding and killing a bunch of people in a solar system. Like, that's
tapping into the underlying code of reality.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that scene I described at the beginning of the novel, where the protagonist finds this book in the library, right? That was in my head the whole time that I was writing the Arcanist tooltips, that I was talking with the folks about the Arcanist, and that moment of discovery where you, as like a person outside a world of mystery, discover sort of this portal into the unknown. That's I read that book, I think, for the first time when I was like 8, maybe. And it was such, it had a dramatic impact on me. In fact, there is a segment very near the beginning of the novel that made me a writer. Like, wow. Full stop.
Wow.
It's a longer set, like, paragraph, but it basically posits the idea that wizards love words, and the ability to not fall asleep at night without reading a book first is one of the hallmarks of, hey, maybe you have the aptitude to become a wizard. And that hit me so hard in my little tiny Zanky, like, brain pan, that it, yeah, I many, many years later became a writer because of that novel. And so, and all the tooltips and all the writing and all the conversations with the team, I had in my head that deep fundamental connection, that love of words and wordplay and the power of, like, just inherent knowledge, right? Like, the power of words.
Yeah. I mean, words are a representation of knowledge.
That's exactly.
Right.
Like, just trying to get that into every little iota of the Arcanist that I could. That's the unofficial canon of the class.
That's pretty cool, just because cool. I really like the way, like, I guess I hadn't really thought of it in regards to the other classes too, which you made reference specifically to the Templar, but I guess you could apply to any of them. It's kind of cool that, you know, when creating these things, you have, like, that's your unofficial headcanon for, like, the crafting of this one specifically.
Right.
But then it just gives you, like, this open RPG template to do what the player wants with it. So it's that's really cool that it's almost like, just like, here's the structure of the design, which has been such a long-standing thing with the series, but in the MMO regards, usually, like, you kind of have your staple setup, which has always been weird because I don't really play MMOs. People have been like, yeah, ESO is different because it doesn't really do that. You can be sort of like, well, anything can heal or damage or,
right,
or tank or whatever. And I'm like, oh yeah, okay, I guess that's pretty unique to this. Again, not having context outside that. But it's interesting to see that, like, it seems like a lot of the design around the classes in general are just like, yeah, no, everything is meant to just be like your base template that you make your thing out of, which is really cool.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's wise. That's how people are still playing Skyrim. And, like, I was talking with Rob the Princess, who's in chat. I was playing Skyrim on stream yesterday. I downloaded 1,800 mods in this this mod installer pack, and somehow it doesn't crash, and it just runs. And, like, there are other ways due to the mods that you don't have to be the Dragonborn. You can do other things. But even in regular Skyrim, a lot of people will just play it where they're like, I'm not the Dragonborn. I'm something else.
Right. The live another life thing or something
right.
like that.
They're just going to go do something else. And so that's the way people interact with these games. And clearly, you all understand that. So when somebody logs into Elder Scrolls Online, they want to craft their own experience. They want to be who they want to be.
Absolutely. I still to this day, it blows me away. I was no longer with the team when the Dark Brotherhood and Thieves Guild content was shipped in the game. But I got to tell you, I played every single bit of that top to bottom, stem to stern. When I played Elder Scrolls games, my number one first character is always a stealth archer,
right,
like assassin character.
Yeah, we joke that, and that's the gravitational pull.
Yes,
Elder Scrolls
yes.
games.
You have to fight it to not yes. fall into that.
Yeah. Oh no, I give in every time. Fallout too, same basic deal.
Right.
And so I love that we're the type of game where you can be this holy roller, you know, quote unquote paladin, right, standing up to the Daedric princes and tanking like your life depends on it. Or you can be how I usually play with is, which is kind of a trash panda that likes to steal stuff from people's pockets in the back streets.
I hear that.
Like, this one is that. Taking this coin. You no longer need it. Thank
exactly.
You.
Yes. Exactly. No, and that's all the same game. And I think that's
right.
Delightful.
Yeah. No, I love that because, yeah, I always tend to fall into being a murder hobo every game. So, like, I get it.
You're the best companion in any Dungeons & Dragons scenario. Well, here we're getting close to the end of the show, and I don't want to keep you here too long. But I've got one final question, and this is something I posed to you in Vegas.
Yes.
So I raised this question. Okay. And obviously, this is a metaphor, but it's a fun metaphor to play with. Let's say you meet a person who's a cat person. They have lots of cats. They have so many cats that they have, and they're also a fan of Elder Scrolls, and they have a cat for every Daedric Prince. How many cats do they own?
I believe, oh, man, I apologize. I don't remember off the top of my head how many Daedric princes there are, but I think what we determined, right, was like, because when you talk about like Sheo versus Jigalag, right?
Right.
Like, so what is that?
Right. The real question is that it seems like there's more than what's supposed to be in there. If you do the hub and spokes thing where you're like, okay, there's this many Aedra and there's this many Daedra. Yeah, but what about Sheogorath and Jigalag? So let's, okay, right. So do they have a Sheogorath cat and a Jigalag cat?
And I believe we also talked about, of course, Fargrave as well, right? Which is sort of its own big question mark hanging out there in the universe. So I feel like the correct answer to this question, how many cats does this person have, is that's a secret that we weren't meant to know, right? Like the, uh-huh. the cats like dart behind the couch sometimes, right? When you look,
they're like, just not there.
Was there trying to count Elder Scrolls?
Right.
I thought there were seven. Exactly, why are there nine? Right.
Was there a flaming red one over there just a minute ago? What happened?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like you look in the shadows and you think you see a cat, but was it just a mirror? Like what was it? Right. Like, I don't know the answer to how many cats she has in her house.
Okay. Well, let's dig into specifics. Is there a Sheogorath and a Jigalag?
I mean, are they
the same cat?
To me, the thing that makes the most sense, right, is like, it's mostly a Sheo cat, but like every once in a while, the Sheo cat escapes at the front door, right?
I was going to say, like, sometimes it leaves.
Exactly.
It gets replaced.
Exactly. And so she borrows a friend's cat, right, to kind of fill that role in her life until eventually the Sheo cat comes back. It might look slightly different. Don't worry. That's fine. It's okay. It's still the Sheo cat. Don't worry about it.
It's just the temporary replacement until the other one comes back.
I can see that one. That was exactly where my mind went with that one, too. Right.
What about Clavicus Vile?
Right.
Is there a Clavicus Vile cat? And then if so, what is Barbus?
I'm pretty sure we were like on the axis of Barbus is like a guinea pig, maybe.
Right. It's like the cat's pet.
Yeah, like the cat's pet, exactly.
Okay. Because there's the debate that they're actually one in the same entity, just kind of split apart. They're not, and kind of like Sheogorath has what's his face? His helper guy.
Haskell.
Haskell isn't Sheogorath, but somehow is always there and seems to be immortal in some way or whatever. Like, what the heck is Haskell? We don't really know.
Right.
But
in
like,
this context, I think like a rat with like a pretty bow.
Yeah. Okay. Collar, so like, it was mentioned in chat. Yeah. Stuffed mouse.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. There
something
you go.
She's related for sure.
Yep, there you go.
And then of course the Aedra are obviously dogs. Right.
The Aedra are dogs. Yes.
That just makes a ton of sense. I think in particular, I think we talked about the Stendard dog being a very good boy, a golden retriever. Right.
Yeah, right.
Like, not the smartest of all the dogs in this particular pantheon, but like just so full of energy.
Just a good boy.
Yeah.
I'll get the bone. Yeah. I got the bone.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. What about Malakath? And if there's a Malakath cat, what is Trinimac?
So my posit is there should be both a Malakath and a Trinimac, right? Just to make things nice and clean. Because again,
Malakath.
I was going to say Weatherhorn beat me to Malakath. That pun. I'm so glad somebody else thought of that. It's like, so Malakath.
I'm surprised that's not the Khajiit great name minds for Malakath.
Oh man,
Malakath.
I was reminded that we have in the store Catwell little cat, right? So that's puns. We're not above cat like animal puns in our world.
Right.
Malakath, Trinimac. I think they should be separate, right? Because we don't know how many cats there are in the house, right? And depending on who you are, you might want that good dog. You might be a dog person. You might be a cat person. I don't want to harsh anyone's groove there.
Right. Right. Okay. So here's another question. We talked about the Aedra. The Aedra clearly dogs. The Tribunal. What are they?
Jeez. Oh, that's right. So I think
they're not cats or dogs. Probably.
No.
Right. They're totally their own thing.
Possibly get. Yeah. Like.
But are they all the same other thing? Are they all like hamsters?
No, they're all individually
different animals.
Yeah. So like, Vivek is like I don't know, like an iguana or something.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
And like Almalexia is like a stork.
Like maybe. A bird, yeah.
Like nice. A bird, yeah, yeah. And then okay. I think Sothisil has got to be, right, like one of those weird, like the bobbing, like the dipping birds, right? Like
like one of the water ones that you put in your drink.
Okay. Yeah. Like the thing on The Simpsons where it was, exactly. It was ordering a tab and it screwed up and caused it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Very ornate, like way over-designed, like Sothisil bird, right? But like, yeah.
Right.
He's some sort of like over-elaborate paperweight, absolutely.
Yeah, I was thinking like one of those like automated vacuum cleaners.
Oh, like a,
like a Roomba. That's what they're called.
So if it's a Roomba, that sounds delightful.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So two more.
Hold on. Before we move on from that one, because ironically, I have a specific thing to that exact part that was actually written into us on Tales of Tamriel. Somebody responded to me via that one. And
awesome.
I wanted to add this on their behalf. So this is from M. Kari. And she specifically says the tribunal are chihuahuas. They think they're dogs and technically they might classify as dogs, but they're just really loud egos and a tiny body.
That's amazing. That's so good.
So shout out to Mkar because I thought that response was hysterical.
That's pretty great.
Right.
That's pretty great.
All right. So two more. Tiber Septim?
Yeah.
What is Tiber Septim? Is Tiber Septim also a dog? Or used to be a person who became a dog? Like what?
Jeez, Tiber Septim is a good one.
Also, maybe Tiber Septim, there's the whole myth of like he's multiple individual people that combined, and like there's like weird stuff, right?
Right, right. Yeah, the historicity of Tiber Septim is thankfully beyond ESO's framework. So on an average day, I don't have to care very much about that.
Right, it hasn't happened yet in the ESO. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I would say. What is Tiber Septim?
So would it be like a platypus where it's just an amalgam of a whole bunch of animals?
I kind of love the Chihuahua thing, right? But maybe like, maybe not a Chihuahua, maybe like a mutt, right? Like the many into one.
Okay.
Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah. 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 Uh-huh.
And it's a little bit small. There's like some terrier in there. There's some corgi, right? Like a lot of smaller dogs that think they're a big deal. Right. And eventually, you know, that corgi becomes a beautiful, I don't know, like Great Dane or some damn thing.
Yeah. It somehow evolved into a Great Dane.
Wonderful. Yeah, exactly.
That's amazing. All right. One left. Ebon Arm?
Oh man.
Ebon Arm is like the gets referenced in a lot of the really old lore.
Yes,
right. But then just like disappears.
There's also a statue in ESO to Ebon Arm. Right. It's even
just
weirder.
Totally just nobody talks about Ebon Arm. What the heck is Ebon Arm?
What is Ebon Arm? I think Ebon Arm, I'm gonna go with like a hairless cat.
Okay.
Like in the neck of the, you know, earlier we talked about how Daedric Prince is sort of a catch-all term, right? Mm-hmm. Like just a generic term. And I don't think I've been armed as a Daedric Prince, just to say that really clearly in case anyone thinks I'm writing lore out of my face. Right? I'm not saying that.
Right.
I'm just saying for this metaphorical space we're playing in right now, right? Like a weird hairless cat.
Right? Like fit a whole bunch of categories.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Not like, quite a dog.
Hypoallergenic.
Not really a cat.
Not really a dog. Not really a cat. Like doesn't trigger anyone's asthma. Like I think that's Ebon Arm.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice.
Awesome.
I enjoy that Ebon Arm reference. That's great.
Awesome. Okay. No, I mean, we could go further into this, but we've got to wrap up the episode. Like, what are dragons? But we won't go there.
Yeah. Oh my God. Some of those are great.
But thank you for joining us. This has been awesome.
This is a lot of fun.
Lotus and I are very excited about the new content, and we love Hermaeus Mora and his forbidden knowledge. And I mean, what you're doing with this year's content is very much parts of Elder Scrolls that separates it from some other fantasies in very interesting and engaging ways. So, of course, we're going to be all over getting through the stories and you know, learning as much as we can from the lore books and all of that. So thank you for being here. Is there anything else you want to share before we head out?
No, I think we got... We got a bunch of fun stuff coming up before the release. There were questions put out for a Lore Masters Archive that'll be coming up soon, answered by my boy, Azander Alcibiades. He's
very cool.
Giant tool bag. I can't wait for you to meet him.
Okay.
He's the best, voice acted by an incredibly talented gentleman, Tommy Jenkins. Just a delight. I think people are really going to like him. So yeah, watch out for that Lore Masters Archive. I think we got a couple more articles coming up. on the website. And I can't wait for people to get in there in, like you said, a little less than a month now.
Yeah.
And see what hot nonsense we've been brewing up.
What hot nonsense. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And Lotus, you have anything else you want to share before we head out?
No, I've just been continuing my playthrough of The Elder Scrolls II Daggerfall to catch everybody up on. That is a game way ahead of its time, and also procedural generation makes me go crazy. But yeah, other than
so
that,
many hallways, know, architects, so many making hallways, so many hallways,
and they all look so similar. but otherwise, we'll just be recording an episode of Tales of Tamriel presented by the unofficial Elder Scrolls pages. Hopefully sometime over the next couple of days. I have a wedding, plus there's Mother's Day this weekend, but we need to cover all of the White Strakes mayhem that's happening with that. So just look for that soon on your podcaster of choice.
Awesome. And you can find Tales of Tamriel, this show, any of the other shows on the network at robotsradio.net. You can also join us here live, twitch.tv/robotsradio for future stuff, or tomorrow afternoon/evening-ish for the
like that.
Voice-a-palooza stuff. So come join us for that. Lots of fun stuff going on. Thank you again for being here, and we'll see you
next
time. Yeah. Bye, everybody.
Bye, all.
See you later.
Thanks for joining us. We'd love to hear from you. You can reach me on Twitter at robots_radio or Lotus of Doom at Lotus of Doom. Also, you can join us on the Robots Radio Discord channel. You can easily just search Robots Radio Discord on Google or check the description underneath the podcast. Also, this podcast is recorded live every week on Thursday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on the Robots Radio channels on Twitch, YouTube, and on Facebook. So just search Robots Radio on any of those platforms. Come join us. We'd love to chat with you while we record the show, or before or after. Either way, just come hang out with us. And if you're looking for more information about my shows and the shows on the Robots Radio Network, go to robotsradio.net for all the information about all the shows on the network, including the Robots Radio Rocket Club, where I help both new and existing podcasters to grow their shows, build their audiences, and create the best podcast they possibly can. All of that at robotsradio.net. We'll see you next time.